Hi there, and welcome to Humanities Viewpoints, a podcast from the Humanities Institute at Wake Forest University. That's the sound of the shofar, the horn blown during services for both Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. These two holidays begin and conclude the time in the Jewish calendar known as the High Holy Days, or Days of Awe. My guest today, Dr. Annalise Gloss-Todrink, talks about the history of these two holidays, the meaning of their connection, as well as her approach to teaching their history in her courses. Annalise Gloss-Todrink is assistant professor in the Department of Religion at Wake Forest University. She is a historian of religions and critical race theorist who studies Jews and Judaism in a variety of modern contexts. Currently, she is completing a manuscript entitled Jewish Identity Between Religion and Race in Shari Tefillah Congregation v. Cobb, in which she examines the 1987 U.S. Supreme Court case that provided race-based civil rights protection to Jews for the first time. She has recent publications in critical research on religion, Religion Compass, and an edited volume entitled Who is a Jew? I hope you enjoy our conversation. So if you could just get us started by giving the audience an overview of Rosh Hashanah, some of the history of the traditions of the holiday, and how it fits in with the High Holy Days.
Sure. So the holiday begins on the first of the month of Tishri, and this is actually the seventh month of the Jewish calendrical year.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And the High Holy Days are also known as Yamim Noraim in Hebrew, which means days of awe. So that lasts from the beginning of Rosh Hashanah through Yom Kippur, which is on the 10th of that month. First, I should say that all Jewish holidays begin on sundown of what we would normally consider the day before the day itself. The holiday actually lasts from sundown through sundown. And Rosh Hashanah lasts for 2 days. And it's the only holiday that continues to be celebrated for 2 days outside of, well, in Israel, because of the reasoning for celebrating it for 2 days is that it's celebrated on the new moon.
Okay.
And it's not clear when that new moon is
right.
going to be. So during the period of the diaspora after the Babylonian exile, a number of holidays began to be celebrated on 2 days instead of one. So, it's like one of the major shifts that occurred, and this is true for many Jewish holidays, is during the period of the destruction of the temple. There were two temple periods, right? And so the first temple was destroyed by the Babylonians in 586 BCE. And during that period of exile is when the religiosity of the Israelite people had to be kind of drastically reconfigured.
Right, okay.
Because the temple had previously served as the central site for Israelite worship, and sacrifice was one of the main practices that was observed. But three of the major holidays were observed in, like, directly as pilgrimage festivals to the temple.
Right.
So the temple's gone, and there needs to be this complete reconfiguration.
Right.
And this is a time when sort of gradually synagogues begin to play more of a role in Jewish life, and or what becomes known as Jewish life. There's a name shift as
well
from Israelite to Jewish.
So
Rosh Hashanah is literally, it means head of the year. Rosh means head, and Ha means the, Shana means year. And it actually does not appear in the Torah. And that's pretty interesting.
I had read that and found that interesting. I didn't know that, so
So it appeared, there are references to this particular holiday in the Torah, however.
But it's called something different?
Yeah, it's referred to as Yom Truah, or Yom HaZikaron, which means Day of the Shofar Blast, or Day of Remembrance.
Okay.
And so it's not until the Book of Ezekiel that we find the actual Hebrew Rosh Hashanah referring to the holiday, and that's during the context of the Babylonian exile. Leviticus 23:32 reads, "In the seventh month, on the first day of the month, you shall observe complete rest, a sacred occasion commemorated with loud blasts." So that's one of two references, and the second one is Numbers 29, verse 1. "And in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no manner of work. It is a day of the blast of the shofar." That part's not actually in the text, to you.
Right.
So those are the two references that we find in the Torah. So in terms of how it's celebrated today, it has a really particular liturgy, and it's the holiday in the Jewish year that spends the most time in the synagogue, with the exception of Yom Kippur.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned earlier, it's a two-day
right.
holiday, mm-hmm. and there's a Torah reading that's set for each of those 2 days.
Okay.
And the first day, it's the birth of Isaac
mm-hmm.
to Abraham and Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
And the second day, it's the binding of Isaac, which is also referred to as the Akedah.
Uh-huh.
So it seems like... one of the things that I think was a major issue, obviously, in exile
mm-hmm.
was, does God remember us?
Mm-hmm.
And so the three main themes of Rosh Hashanah are, in Hebrew, they're Malchuyo, Zichrono, and Shofaro. And
mm-hmm.
Malchuyo refers to God's sovereignty or kingship.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that, you know, God is king of the world and human actions do matter in relation
right.
to the kingship or the sovereignty of God.
Mm-hmm.
And Zichrono refers to means remembrance.
Mm-hmm.
It refers to God remembering
mm-hmm.
those actions. And Shofarot refers to the kind of judgment component of the day, because it's also thought of as a day of judgment,
uh-huh,
even though
yeah.
it's the new year. It has all these different meanings.
Lots of
that
different
are
components,
overlaid
yeah,
and gain and decrease in significance
mm-hmm.
depending on what time period you're looking at. So,
yeah.
So that those themes would have been emphasized probably, and I'm not actually a historian of this period,
mm-hmm,
but
yeah.
probably fairly early on.
Mm-hmm.
And they're certainly emphasized in synagogue liturgy today.
Right. Okay.
So one of the main features of the Rosh Hashanah service is the shofar blasts.
Mm-hmm.
I should explain what that
it's
is.
It's a horn, right? Yeah. Yeah.
It's horn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And it has relevance to the two Torah readings.
Right.
Particularly the binding of
mm-hmm.
Isaac, actually.
Yeah.
Not the first one, but
mm-hmm.
it has relevance to the fact that God, according to the Bible,
mm-hmm.
brought a ram in replacement
mm-hmm.
of Isaac
right.
as the sacrifice.
Yeah.
And so the shofar ram's horn is related
symbolizes
to
that,
the,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
relevant to that.
Yeah.
But it's also thought to be, to sound like the voices of the prophets.
Mm-hmm.
There's all these different ways in which it's connected to judgment
mm-hmm.
and like a day of judgment.
Right.
And you know, calling people to action,
mm-hmm, right.
to repent,
mm-hmm.
which are periodically throughout, beginning with Erev Rosh Hashanah, which means the evening service
mm-hmm.
of Rosh Hashanah,
mm-hmm.
and then through the following 2 days.
Right.
And then the final shofar blast is at the close of the Yom Kippur service, which is called the Ne'ilah service. I could talk a little bit more about the three themes that I mentioned.
Yeah, that'd be great, actually.
They,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. How they kind of play out. So,
mm-hmm.
Again, the three themes are Malchuyo, Zichrono, and Shofarot.
Mm-hmm.
And Malchuyo refers to God as king, being
mm-hmm.
sovereign of the world. And it's also related to... So all of these three themes we can think about as being kind of... in some way embedded in us as beings,
mm-hmm.
because in Jewish tradition the idea is that all humans are created in the image of God,
mm-hmm.
and so we also embody these themes, and
right.
to think about what does that mean for us as individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So, Malchuyo being about control of ourselves and others,
right.
Zichrono, which again is about remembrance,
mm-hmm.
Having to do with our own memory and thought,
yeah.
and Shofaro having to do with our communication and speech.
Mm-hmm.
And so one rendition that I've seen is that these are three components of the creation narrative,
mm-hmm.
and so each one of these themes refers to one of three creation stories. We
right.
don't often think of three creation stories.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But so the first being the Garden of Eden.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that whole situation as pertaining to these concepts of control
right.
and desire.
Mm-hmm.
The story about Noah and the flood.
Mm-hmm.
And Zichronot being about remembrance.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea that God remembers Noah and saves him
right.
from
mm-hmm.
the flood. And then the third one being the Tower of Babel.
Okay.
And
mm-hmm.
The role of that speech has, and
right.
the significance of speech.
Right.
And now, I just want to say that, so this interpretation is not something that necessarily every Jewish person
sure.
would know about.
Sure.
But it's
mm-hmm.
the kind of thing that's interesting, because when you do some research on anyone, like anything, basically, in Jewish tradition. Mm-hmm. There are so many layers of meaning, mm-hmm. and in different cultural contexts, you find different interpretations having more or less significance, or mm-hmm. being the way in which people think that, this means this
to us. Right, yeah.
So now that you've given us some information about Rosh Hashanah, could you talk a little bit about its relationship to Yom Kippur and the days of awe as they, you know, sort of the trajectory of that during that month?
Absolutely.
Thanks.
So leading up to, maybe I mentioned this before, but leading up to the Days of Awe is the month of Elul, and that's meant to be a month of reflection and repentance, or teshuvah in Hebrew. But but Yom Kippur is really kind of like last chance, and to put it in really colloquial terms.
Yeah.
So the idea is that, and this is sometimes thought of, you know, more or less metaphorically, but there is the idea of a book of life and mm-hmm. a book of death, mm-hmm. and the aim is you want to be inscribed in the book of life for a good year to come. And another kind of component of that metaphor is that the gates of heaven are viewed as closing mm-hmm. at the end of Yom Kippur. And so you want to kind of make sure that you have done all the work that you need to do. And that really should have been done during Rosh Hashanah.
Right.
But there is this kind of 10-day period for, you know, any amends you may need to make with friends, neighbors, family members, people in your life, and also a time of repentance to God as well.
Mm-hmm.
So Yom Kippur is the Day of Atonement, and it is marked by, it's a rather lengthy set of five different services,
mm-hmm.
and people who observe it rigorously, I would say, spend the entire time in the synagogue. I mean, of course, they go home and sleep. There's an evening service, Erev Yom Kippur, and then the fast begins before the evening service. It's a 25-hour fast.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so before the fast itself, it's important to have this festive meal.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a kind of actual component of the celebration of the holiday itself. So there's the festive meal, and then there's the synagogue service. And it's called Kol Nidre, which means all vows.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a specific, there's a legend about this service, which is that there was a rabbi who was murdered in the medieval mm-hmm. period who, he was asked to, his name is Rabbi Amnon of Mainz, and he was asked to give up his faith. And
mm-hmm.
so it's a kind of, he, you know, obviously refused to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so Kol Nidre has had different meanings at different points in Jewish history. And during the medieval period, like later medieval period, it was associated with the Spanish Inquisition
mm-hmm.
and the forced conversions
mm-hmm.
of Jews to Christianity. And so one of the ways it was interpreted at that time was, this is a way in which the vow that you made to become Christian, you're released from that vow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, during the 18th century, actually, there was a kind of anti-Semitic narrative that this actually meant that Jews were untrustworthy, that if they were being released from their vows. And actually, it's a legal statement, and it pertains only to vows between the individual and God.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the beginning, this Kol Nidre, and it has a very evocative melody. It's a really kind of interesting contrast between the legal character of the narrative
mm-hmm.
and the very solemn, beautiful, very evocative
mm-hmm.
melody. So anyway, that's Kol Nidre,
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of begins the evening service, and it's a solemn time. The next day is characterized by four different services. So
mm-hmm.
there's Shachri, the morning service. There's an additional service, Musaf, which includes a history of the martyrs in the rabbinic period and also a description of the temple service, so the way that the holiday used to be observed. So there's actually this really important shift religiously between the temple time, mm-hmm. you know, when the temple stood, and the way the holiday is observed now.
Okay.
So this part of the Musaf service is a recollection of mm-hmm. what happened during the temple times. And so actually another thing that I want to say about the holiday is its biblical basis, mm-hmm. which is Leviticus 20, chapter 23, verse 32. And it's the text itself says, "It shall be a Sabbath of complete rest for you, and you shall practice self-denial. On the ninth day of the month at evening, from evening to evening, you shall observe this, your Sabbath." So it's the idea of it being both a time for atonement and a time of complete rest. I mean, those are kind of merged concepts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and then just to kind of follow up with the remaining two services, so then there's the afternoon service, Mincha, which includes a reading of the Book of Jonah, and then there's the evening service, Ne'ilah, which concludes with the blowing of the shofar.
Mm-hmm.
And so that concludes, you know, right about sundowns, and people then, you know, as soon as the sun officially sets,
right.
they go and eat again.
Right, right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. There are actually five specific prohibitions. You must abstain from eating and drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't bathe, you can't anoint your body with mm-hmm. oil, which was, you know, traditional thing to do before
right.
we had all the products that we have
sure.
today, lotions and things like that.
Right.
And you cannot have any sexual relations,
mm-hmm.
and you should not wear leather shoes, which mm-hmm. is an interesting one,
yeah.
Because, so that also pertains to a kind of comfort
oh,
and
okay.
a kind of
mm-hmm.
luxury.
Sure.
So, some people go barefoot, other
mm-hmm.
people wear, you know, cloth shoes
mm-hmm.
or some other kind of shoes.
Sure.
Typically, actually, in, you know, contemporary U.S., people just wear shoes that aren't leather.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But all of these are meant to elicit in the person who is observing a feeling of like bare life,
mm-hmm.
asceticism,
right.
like really stripped down and really focusing on your human relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also associated with facing death. As I mentioned, there's the Book of Life and the Book of Death.
Right.
But another component of this observance is many men, or many, you know, traditionally many men will wear a kittel, which is a
mm-hmm.
white robe, and it's a robe that they wear, that Jewish men wear on their wedding day,
mm-hmm.
on Yom Kippur, and they're buried.
Right.
In that,
mm-hmm.
right. So there is this very profound sense of facing death.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's important to kind of keep in mind
mm-hmm.
in terms of, you know, what characterizes this holiday.
Right. Well, we talked a little, or mentioned that you might be able to talk about how it doesn't really figure into your scholarship as much, but it does in your teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so how do you talk about it in your
yeah.
teaching?
Yeah, so I always teach about it
mm-hmm.
in my Introduction to Jewish Traditions course.
Mm-hmm.
And when I teach that course in the fall, because
yeah.
I teach it
right.
many semesters, not
yeah.
every semester, but
sure.
many of them.
Yeah.
And when I teach it in the fall, I do a unit that's a week long on
mm-hmm.
Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'll be doing this fall, actually, is having students do research and
mm-hmm.
give group presentations on these holidays in class.
Oh, great. Yeah.
And then, you know, the readings that will be provided, but also some additional
right.
research that they'll conduct on
mm-hmm.
their own. And so I'll be asking them to look at the origins
mm-hmm.
of the holiday in the Torah, and then how some of the historical developments, and then also the liturgy
mm-hmm.
and contemporary customs.
Mm-hmm.
But what I attempt to do in the class, actually, is really emphasize the theme of historical exile and
yeah.
what
mm-hmm.
an important role that's had on the
sure.
ways in which Jews practice
mm-hmm.
and observe, including even today
mm-hmm.
when there is a state of Israel
yeah.
and many Jews in the U.S. feel, you know, very much like
mm-hmm.
they're not living in the diaspora.
Right.
right. And so it's a different situation today, but for most of Jewish history, there was very much a sense of, we are living in exile,
right.
this is Galut, like, this
mm-hmm.
is yeah. the situation is, you know, from very dire to mm-hmm. like somewhat dire.
Right.
You
yeah.
know, somewhere in that
yeah.
frame.
Yeah.
So the sense of really having this deep and emotional relationship with God mm-hmm. as an individual and as a community mm-hmm. has a lot of weight in that context.
Sure.
The sense of being in exile,
mm-hmm.
praying for the end of the exile,
mm-hmm. yeah.
this belief that judgment, the day of judgment, Rosh Hashanah, plays such an important role in that,
right.
in Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. So this mm-hmm. period becomes really significant in that context.
Within that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I try to emphasize that in mm-hmm. class, and then I spend actually quite a number, most of the semester,
mm-hmm.
we do a lot of historical
mm-hmm.
discussion, like reading and discussion,
right.
and we think about, what I encourage the students to think about this class, Introduction to Jewish Traditions,
mm-hmm.
as being about Jewish people, because
right.
those are, you know, that's who practice
sure,
Jewish
yeah.
traditions.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
just exist
right, right.
out there on their own.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're very much grounded in historical and geographical context
yeah.
and in the lived experiences of real people.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's really important to teach critical thinking, which
right.
I know everybody says.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But what that means to me
mm-hmm.
is that I want students to have the tools
mm-hmm.
for how to, like, what questions to ask.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They encounter an op-ed piece on some religious event.
Right.
I want them to be able to read that piece, identify the argument,
mm-hmm.
but also to be able to contextualize and think about, you
sure.
know, why is the author making this or that argument?
Right.
So I've structured my classes with critical thinking
mm-hmm.
as the focal point,
mm-hmm.
but I want students to think about the ways in which institutional formations,
mm-hmm.
like institutionalized racism,
sure.
sexism,
mm-hmm.
views
yeah.
about what religious identities are,
mm-hmm.
things like that,
mm-hmm.
how that informs the ways in which these conflicts play out in society,
sure.
both on a macro and micro level.
Mm-hmm.
So I also pay really close attention to that
yeah.
in structuring my classes.
Mm-hmm. So thanks very much for doing this.
Oh,
I really appreciate it.
Me.
Yeah.
I really appreciate
yeah,
the invitation.
This has been great.
That was Annalise Glaz-Todrink on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. For previous episodes, visit humanitiesinstitute.wfu.edu/podcast or listen to us for free on iTunes. Just search for Humanities Viewpoints in the podcast section of the iTunes store. Thanks for listening.